On Your Gaydar, discussing all things LGBT, be sure to follow us on social media. It's at On Your Gaydar across all socials.
Welcome back to On Your Gaydar, your guide to the gay scene. I'm Kaylee Golding, joined by two incredible guests, hopefully three, but everyone knows about my best friend, Soraya. Sometimes she's delayed, sometimes she's here. We run our fives. So Soraya will hopefully be joining us later on in the episode, but right now I'm joined by Levi. Talk to us.
Hello. Hi, everybody. My name is Levi Sean, and I am a TV personality from Wolverhampton.
Yes, yes. And also joined by Rebecca. Talk to us.
Hi, I'm Becca Ferretti. I'm a radio DJ, and yeah, thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, thank you so much for joining me, because the thing is, I posted the situation, what we're talking about, on my story today, and Becca was like, yes, I want to be involved. I was like, yes, yes, this is just great. Do you know when plans just align?
Yes.
It was very that. So this episode is all about ADHD and autism and navigating that in relationships, but specifically in queer relationships as well. So me personally, I don't have autism, but I am awaiting diagnosis for ADHD. But you see this NHS waiting time? Wow. It takes a while, but do you know what? I get it. The NHS are doing the best that they can. I'm grateful we have it in the UK. So it is what it is. But Becca, talk to us about your journey through being diagnosed.
So I'm kind of in a bit of a similar position to you, Kaylee. So I first heard, like, thought of the idea that maybe I'm autistic about 2 years ago in a conversation with my mum. She sort of mentioned it to me. She's like, you know, I've always thought you were autistic. And I was like, you never mentioned this before.
Oh my gosh.
So ever since then, I've been trying to like get a diagnosis and stuff. But I'm pretty comfortable with like the self-diagnosis, that this is what applies to me. But yeah, just getting a diagnosis in general. And I think especially as a woman and as an adult, the waiting lists are just so long and so hard. So a lot of the time you do have to just kind of settle for that self-diagnosis.
Yeah, 100%. And I think what's kind of good now in like this world is kind of we live in like this woke world now, where there's so much online that you can really see what you relate to, what you don't relate to, symptoms. And it's a nice way to also build communities as well. So yeah, but we're going to talk a little bit more about how you found it and how you find navigating relationships. But Levi, the reason why you join us is because your ex-partner, how long was she together?
2.5 years.
Okay, so you were together for a long time. This wasn't a typical gay one-week relationship.
This was a relationship.
This is a real relationship. And your partner had both autism and ADHD, right?
Mm-hmm, correct, yeah.
So do you remember having that conversation with him then?
Oh, 100%. And I was a lot younger then, so I wasn't as mindful with my words. So I just used to be like, do you have ADHD? Because you're doing too much. Like, when we first met, he was obviously very hyperactive and he was very animated, and that was great for me because I like people like that. But then when you're just chilling at home and you can't sit still and you're fidgeting, I'm looking at you like, what's the problem? So for months and months, I was like, let's go and get you tested. He was like, nah, I'm calm, I'm good. In the end, I convinced him to get him tested after speaking to his mom. And yeah, it turned out he had ADHD. And then a couple of years down the line, it turned out that he had autism and ADHD. So it explained a lot, because I'm very spontaneous. And I'd be like, okay, let's go for dinner. Let's book a flight. Let's do this. Let's do that. And the autistic side said, no. I like routine. I'm not doing that. So that would really trigger him into like acting out and doing things that he wouldn't want to do, basically. So let's say he went to the club and it was £5 entry last week and £10 entry this week. That would be a trigger for him. And that would cause him to lash out. Never at me, but he'd like, you know, act violently towards people if we were out. And it got a bit much. And I think that he learned what his trigger points were and then slowly learned to manage them. But yeah, it's tough. It's a tough one. It really is.
Yeah. And it is so interesting though, like the day-to-day things, like even just going clubbing, as you said, I wouldn't even think how someone could be triggered about like a ticket price, something like that. So I can imagine for you as someone's partner, like now if you was ever to get back with him or be with someone else that has that, like how would you change how you act maybe?
I would definitely be a lot more understanding. Obviously this is years ago, I'm 31 now, so I'm a lot more open to, you know, all these things, and I'd be a lot more understanding, and also I'd be a lot more helpful in terms of, okay, these are your trigger points, let's book a holiday, but let's sit down, we're going to plan it out, and we're going to book it for, let's say, June. So you know exactly when we're going, you know what time we're going, you've got all the details, so there's nothing for you to be triggered about. And I think in this day and age especially, we're all different, we're all unique, we're all eccentric, and we all have our little quirks. And to be quite honest with you, it didn't bother me whatsoever. If anything, it made him more attractive to me, the fact that he had ADHD and autism and was able to live his everyday life, still looking cute, being my man.
Yeah, being my man, still looking cute, we love to see it. So, my best friend now joins the call. Hi, Soraya.
I mean, technically, this is quite fitting. Like, tell me you've got ADHD and then you've turned up on time. Like, it just doesn't, it goes hand in hand, doesn't it? I should have been like, really, I'm being on brand.
We love you for it. So for anyone just tuning in, Becca Soraya, Levi Soraya.
Hey.
So if we could introduce you to the podcast now and talk about your journey to being diagnosed, then that would be fabulous.
Okay, I have just woke up, so bear with me. I might be mumbling a bit for about 10 minutes, but it's all good. So how old am I now, Kaya?
I don't bloody know.
How old am I? I'm 30 in December, so I started my journey to getting diagnosed when I was 23. I'd started working at a secondary school as like an SEN teaching assistant. And my colleagues that I worked with in like the SEN department, they kept asking me like weird questions. Like they were like you relate to the kids so much, like you get on with the kids so much, like you're so good at what you do considering you've never done this before. I was like, oh, when did you get diagnosed? I was like, what are you talking about? They was like, oh, do you not have anything? I was like, what do you mean? Have what? They was like, you haven't got autism or anything like that. I was like, well, not the last time I checked. So then they were like, oh, well, we just see so many similarities with you and the kids. And we thought that's why, you know, you're able to get on with them so well. And then it sort of just got me thinking then more and more. And like I was thinking about like school and stuff and like going through uni and things like that and previous jobs that I'd been in that like hadn't worked out for me. And I just started thinking and then I realised like it wasn't the first time that people have said something similar to that. Like they either thought I already had been diagnosed with something or they thought that I should get diagnosed with something. So I had a chat with my mom and my partner at the time and we all just decided maybe it's worth going to the GP and saying something and just to see what happens. So I went to the GP and they put me on to forward thinking. And the first meeting I had with the doctor at forward thinking, he asked me so many questions, it was ridiculous. Like I was so exhausted by the end of it. I think I wasn't sitting down anymore. I was just walking up and down, like pacing up and down, looking out the window and getting really distracted. And he was like, okay, I've got all I need to know. I definitely want to put you forward. And first he put me forward for the ADHD assessment. So yeah, that started when I was 23, just about to turn 24. And it took, I'd say, just under a year for me to go through that entire process and finally get diagnosed. I was well into being 24 by the time I had the official diagnosis. And once that was done, then I had to go all the way back to the beginning to start all over again to go through the autism diagnosis process. That was even longer. That was more frustrating. And like I will say, I'm not surprised that there's a lot of people out there who go undiagnosed or they are more happy with just having self-diagnosis because the wait alone before you even get to the assessment bit, that alone is too much. And especially if you're somebody who is also battling with poor mental health as well, on top of your neurodivergency, it's wrong. You shouldn't be having to wait all this time. And I get it. I know the NHS is up against it and people don't have the money to be paying for these private diagnoses. Like you see people like, oh, I think I have something. And then 2 weeks later, you're seeing they've got a diagnosis because they just slapped £1,000 for a private diagnosis.
Is that how much it is?
Yeah, it's about a grand. It depends. It's not cheap, basically.
Yeah.
So people haven't got that money. So you have no choice but to sit and wait. If you want the official diagnosis, you have no choice but to sit and wait for the NHS. And, you know, some people can be waiting for like up to 3 years.
Yeah.
So like I think I was just turning 26 when I finally got through my process of the autism diagnosis. I think I was about 26, and I'd started that at 24.
Oh my gosh, that is a long process. And just to get you up to date, Soraya, so Becca's currently self-diagnosed, because we're talking again about how long the wait is and the process of it all. And Levi spoke to us then about his relationship. Anyone can jump in on this. Do you feel like you need a diagnosis, or they need to be self-aware for you to be able to successfully move forward in a relationship?
I would say I don't think a diagnosis, like an official doctor's diagnosis, is necessary. It's more about being self-aware, because at the end of the day, the diagnosis is not going to make a difference. And unfortunately, as adults, there isn't a lot for us out there. Look, I don't want to come on this podcast and be like, NHS, this, that and the other, but I can only speak from my experiences. And like, I'm currently going through it right now with the adult ADHD service. They are shit. They are awful. So having an official diagnosis is not going to make much difference. It's more about being self-aware that you have these conditions and you having to find what works for you and what doesn't work for you. Because I'm telling you right now, and nobody else out there doing it for you. It's you need to be self-aware, and you have to want to help yourself, and have to have, and you need a support network around you that is patient and understanding and willing to help you on that journey of realizing what works and what doesn't work for you.
I also feel that, like, well, speaking from experience, I'm a man, and men aren't always the most self-aware. They're not always, you know, looking at it from other people's perspectives. You know, I date them, I know. So I feel like as a man, you need to be self-aware in regards to your health, your mental health, everything, because I know if I wake up one morning, I know I don't feel right. I know that I'm ill. I had COVID a couple of weeks ago. I wasn't really ill with it, but I knew I had something was going on. So I think it's about being self-aware and just making sure that you're putting yourself in the best situation where you can live your everyday life without, you know, having all of these issues. And part of that is just knowing what's happening with your body and with your mind.
Yeah. Do you know what as well, though? So me personally, like, I have my own mental health battles up and down, here, there and everywhere. But I've now learned when I'm dating, I have to ask someone, like, the first few questions is like, how is your mental health? So I know what I'm working with, so I can make sure I'm not triggering you, and I don't want you to trigger me, because you see this mind, I cannot for it. But then I'm like, is it too much to ask someone very early on, like, what is your mental health saying? What's the situation? What do you think?
Not in this day and age, not at all.
No.
It's so much more common now for, you know, for people to be suffering with things and suffering in silence with things. I don't think it's too much to ask somebody at all in this day and age. If anything, that's you being mindful.
Especially on the gay scene as well. I think, like, there are awkward questions. I have to ask, what's your HIV status? That's a horrible question to ask. But unfortunately, as a gay man, these are questions that you have to ask. So let's just normalise it and make it like a normal conversation, because these are real things that are affecting people in real life.
1,000%. Becca, what do you think? How do you stand on it?
I think it's so good that you asked that question, because I feel like a lot of people probably think that, oh, maybe I wouldn't say something like that on a first date. But I think by you putting that out there and you're both aware of, like, where each other is at, it's going to avoid, like, further down the line, if you do, like, trigger people, you sort of cut that out straight away by referencing it.
Yeah. Can we talk a little bit then about people that are around you? Because Soraya, I know you said that people pointed it out to you that you worked with. Levi, you pointed these things out to your partner. But Becca, on the other hand, you, when you went to your mom was like, oh wait, actually, yeah, maybe you do have autism. From your experience then, do you think that if you spot these signs in a loved one, whether it be a friend, partner, family member, do you think you should go to them and say, this is my concern, I think you might be battling this? Or what do you think?
I think from my perspective, I was very grateful that she said it. I wish she had said it sooner, because if I had known this sort of thing when I was like a child or a teenager, it would have saved me a lot of like distress. So only coming to it a couple of years ago was like, it was good, but also I wish that I'd had it sooner. So yeah, I would mention it to someone if you're close to them and you think that that's going to benefit them.
Yeah, I agree. At secondary school, I was really, really naughty. And I was clearly displaying a lot of things, probably more towards the ADHD side. And the school brought my mum in and said to her, and like, we're talking, this is like 2005, 2006. They brought my mum in and they was like, look, we really think you should take her to the GP. We think we're concerned and we think she's displaying signs of X, Y, and Z. And obviously, back then, weren't really so much of a thing. So the first thing my mum did was get defensive, thinking they were trying to call her a bad parent and that she doesn't know what's going on with her child. So she completely sort of just shunned that away. And obviously, if you ask her now, that's something that she has to live with, that we could have avoided so much if we went to the doctors then when I was a teenager, rather than me having to, her watching me go through what I've been through as an adult. And obviously everything that I've gone through up until the point of knowing, oh, this is why I'm like this, this is why I do this. So definitely it makes the difference, somebody saying to you, look, I think that you need to go and talk to somebody, because it definitely makes a difference, definitely.
Yeah. And Levi, being on the other side of that then, so when you did go to your partner and you was just like, because you said to him, right, like, do you reckon you have something? Do you have ADHD? How did he receive that? Was that okay? Or
he didn't receive it at all. I haven't got ADHD. I'm fine. I'm just hyper. I've been like this my whole life. It is what it is. But then when I spoke to his mum about it, she's like, actually, I kind of had the same feelings, but I didn't know how to approach him about it because I didn't want to get like an aggressive reaction. So I think, again, it's just about being delicate. Everyone handles things differently, and it's about your approach to the situation. And at the end of the day, you're doing it for that person's well-being. It's not to be horrible or nasty. So I think these conversations need to become regular, normal conversations, because the taboo around it is ridiculous. There's still people.
Yeah, 1,000%. So obviously, this is On Your Gaydar. We have to talk gay shit. That's what it is. Do you know what I mean? So let's kind of talk about then, like, the effect of both being in a queer relationship, but also having ADHD and autism and trying to navigate that. Do you think it's a different experience than if you was in a straight relationship?
I think that it is a different experience, but I think maybe for better reasons. Like, I think generally there is the intersection of like queer people and autism is quite big. There's quite a big crossover. And so I think that you can be more open-minded in a way. So I feel like maybe issues that people who are in a queer relationship that aren't autistic might have might not be there in an autistic relationship.
I get what you mean.
Okay, I've got you. So basically, being in a queer relationship, we're more open-minded, so it's kind of easier to navigate.
Yeah.
Okay. We are open-minded, us queers. Just saying, we are. We are. not me always with the gay flag, like. Soraya, Levi, do you want to pitch in? What do you think?
No, I agree with Becca. I think we're, as queer people, we're sort of already trained to be open-minded and understanding of differences. So obviously when you meet somebody whose mind works differently to yours, we're a bit more prone to being like, okay, like I can work with this, I can understand this, I want to get to know how to best deal with this, because we're already sort of not conditioned, but well, conditioned, because obviously you grow up with the experiences that you have as a queer person. Straight away, we're already welcoming to different things, different people straight away, because obviously we've always been looked at as different.
Yeah, that makes sense. What about you, Levi?
It's difficult because you know the gay scene. It's a madness. There's a lot going on. And I think I'm going to speak in from my situation with my ex. Like I said, he had a lot of triggers. He liked routine. He liked things to be kind of his way. He was from a traveller background. So he was brought up fist fighting every weekend, like on the car park. That's how he was brought up. So in his mind, it was okay to be violent towards men. So if we've gone to a club and let's just say someone that I was talking to was there or my ex was there, that's triggering for him because you never told me that we're going to be there, even though I didn't know. And then he then thought he could get aggressive and put hands on me and other people because that was the way that he was brought up. So the gay scene is triggering without having ADHD or autism. So having all of that can add the gay scene, add the mix-up and the drama. It's too much.
I completely understand that. And I think that's a nice little segue into navigating friendships on the gay scene when it comes to ADHD and autism. So how have you guys found that, Soraya and Becca?
The majority of my friends that are also autistic or like on the autistic spectrum are also queer. So there's like already that understanding like between everyone, you're all kind of in the same position. And I think that having all of those layers, you kind of understand each other on like another level.
I agree with that. I've obviously doing what I do, working so centrally in the gay scene. Obviously, I have my friends and then I have people that like, yeah, I see you every weekend, but I wouldn't see you in the week sort of thing. And obviously within my friends, I have some who are also neurodivergent, and it's true, you get each other on a different level. You're able to see each other in a way that other people don't see you. And that's nice and comforting to have around there, because like Levi said, like the gay scene, it can get a lot of the time. So it's nice to have those people that see you exactly how you are, and you see them, and you know, you're able to be support networks for each other. And also on that, like for me anyway, there's certain things that I do. So like I have tics and stuff like that, and like I do a lot of like a twitch and things like that, and sometimes I shout things like bogeys and stuff like that that I try and hold in a lot when I'm around, say like friends on the scene that aren't neurodivergent. But obviously that causes me physical pain being around people where I feel like I have to hold it in, because I'm like, you haven't seen all of me before and I don't want to make you feel uncomfortable. And I shouldn't have to feel like that. I shouldn't have to hold things in and cause myself physical pain. But it's almost like I feel like they won't get it, and they will look at me differently to how they hold me now, which is, again, sad.
No, that is heartbreaking. And I think what's really complex about like the scene anyway is a lot of it's just built around clubbing. So you don't really understand and know what's going on in people's lives outside of just seeing them in a gay club every single weekend. So me personally, like Soraya's now one of my best friends. I didn't even know all of this until probably like the past year, which is like crazy. So it's a weird dynamic, right?
It's like there's things that I'll do in front of Kaylee now that I wouldn't have done in, say, the past 3 or 4 years that I've known her. There's stuff I do in front of her now, and she's like, oh, what was that? And I'm like, oh, yeah, I do that. I just used to hold it in front of you before. She's like, oh, okay then. So I always see something new. Every time you see me, you see something new.
But I love that though, because I want you to be able to be your full self around me, because do you know what I mean? Yeah. I don't want to be friends with a version of someone. That's boring. Like, I want the actual complete you. To end the episode then, if we could all go around and give one piece of advice for someone that is currently in a relationship with someone that has autism or ADHD or both. So Becca, if we could start with you, what would be your one piece of advice?
I would say listen to them. Don't think just because you've seen like a perception of autism maybe in like TV or you've read about it that is what this person is like, because even within like autism there are so many variations. Like there are things that some of my friends with autism will do and I'll be like, oh, that's never something that I would do, or there's like a trait that I have that doesn't bother them at all. So just take the person as they are, listen to what makes them uncomfortable, and just ask them about it, because I think if you ask them about it, they'll be more than happy to let you know.
Yeah, communication really is key. Levi?
So be kind, be gentle, and just be supportive, because if you have an argument and think about how it affects you and your mind and your mental health, a lot of the time it's amplified by a million for somebody with ADHD or autism or both. So going into a relationship with somebody that, you know, has ADHD or autism, I think it's just very important just to be, just be nice, that's all.
Yeah. Soraya, what would you say?
If you're going into it and you have no idea about anything at all, it doesn't hurt to do your own research. But like Becca said, we're not all the same. So don't like generically think you've seen one, so you've seen us all. But it doesn't hurt to do your own research and just talk to your partner and be mindful about what their perceptions of things are. And especially like, you know, in arguments and things like that, you have to understand it's always going to get seen in a different way, and you need to sometimes put your views on a back burner so that you're not reacting in a certain way that's going to make it even more triggering for your partner. And I would definitely say have a lot of patience, a lot of patience and a lot of understanding. Also, a side note, no, it's not advice, but she'll kill me if I don't do it. I'd have to say that my girlfriend is amazing with how she looks after me and supports me. And I honestly don't think I could live day to day without how she takes care of me and looks after me. So I just want to point that out as well.
There are
wonderful women in the world, but I have the best one.
Oh, we love love. Oh, this is so cute. Also, talking of like research, I didn't even realise as well how much ADHD isn't even like physical. Like a lot of it's in the mind. Because me personally, I'm not someone that's always like bounced off the walls. But the reason why I went to go get the diagnosis and I'm still waiting is because of how my mind, like if you walk into a room, I'll leave a cupboard open, I'll be doing another task and another task and another task, and I just can't concentrate on one thing.
That's the misconception with ADHD though. Everybody always thinks it's hyperactivity. They don't realise that there's hyperactivity, yes, but actually that's not the most common form of ADHD, especially in adults and in girls. The most common is the inattentiveness. Obviously, if you've got it combined, like I do, then yes, you are going to see hyperactivity, but most of the time it's the inattentiveness. It's all the other things that you wouldn't associate with having ADHD. So... No, I get that.
No, 1,000%. So I think the biggest message from that is, of course, just do your research. Like, and when you research, you'll be gagged, just saying.
And I tell you what, the research, you probably learn a lot more looking on like Instagram pages and people's TikTok pages rather than actually going on Google. A lot of the stuff on Google is a sack of shit. You learn a lot more on social media about these things than you do on the actual internet.
Literally. So talking of social media, does everyone want to throw out their handles? We'll start with you, Becca.
Yeah, so it's at becca.ferretti on Instagram, and then I've got a YouTube as well, which is Becca Ferretti.
Amazing. Levi?
You can find me on Instagram. It's Levi Sean 1991.
Yeah. Soraya?
Put more fucking socials on your podcast. Too many fucking times. There's a lot of fucking weirdos following you. I'm only joking. My socials across everything is at just_Soraya.
Amazing. And mine's at Kaylee Golden, but you don't need to follow mine. Just follow the podcast.
Got enough followers. Don't follow us. Don't need anymore.
No, stop it. Well, you can't follow me. But you can't slide in the DMs. Go away.
You married that.
Stop making out my business.
You married that.
Right. So follow at On Your Gaydar on TikTok, on Twitter, on Instagram. You can listen back to all of the episodes. And thank you so much for joining us. Bury that. Right, bye.
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 On Your Gaydar, discussing all things LGBT. Be sure to follow us on social media. It's at On Your Gaydar across all socials.